On August 17, 2015, the Friends of Penobscot Bay hosted a talk by research fellow Kevin Freck, a recent graduate of Temple University. Freck carried out a study of West Penobscot Bay's past, present, and potential future forest cover on behalf of the Friends and of Public Laboratory. His work was supported by a grant by Azavia, self-described as, quote, a geospatial analysis firm specializing in location-based web and mobile application development, unquote. Talk was held at Stella Morris House in Rockland, Maine. It's 1 hour long.
The project was mostly focused on creating some tools for assessing and managing human impact on Maine's harbors. So a quick outline for the presentation. This can be a short intro. Then I'm going to talk about the project goals for the summer. This project started in June, and it's concluding next week. The methods I used and the software and data that I used to find these conclusions. The findings and results for West Penobscot Bay and its towns, the conclusions and some recommendations for further research and what to do with this data. So I'm a Summer of Maps fellow for Azavia. They're a software company, data analytics company in Philadelphia, focusing in civic software and data analytics. Mostly for civic purposes, and they do pro bono programs such as this, which matches up nonprofits with some fellows. And I'm on the data analytics team here, which we focus on identifying hidden patterns within the data, using that to prioritize and plan operations, streamlining the decision-making process, and visually communicating these plans to others, in this case, through maps.
Is it okay to ask questions during the presentation?
Please hold all questions till the end. I'm going to leave some time at the end for discussion. We can always go back, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of questions. So a little bit about me. I'm just graduated from Temple University. I study geography and urban studies. I'm an avid cartographer. I love maps of all kinds, new maps, old maps, love making maps. That's why I applied for this program. And I'm a nature lover. Even though I'm from major city, I grew up in the suburbs and love spending time in nature and wildlife, so I'm really interested in this project. The program that I'm part of, it's called Summer of Maps, and it's $5,000 for the summer. It matches up nonprofit organizations with some data analysis, and it's really cool because we get to be mentored by the Azavia staff directly and get some nice experience, in the industry, so we can take something with us. So my clients for this project were Friends of Penobscot Bay, and in collaboration with Public Labs, Public Laboratory for Open Technology. They're the ones who applied for the grant for this for Penobscot Bay, correct? And they really focus on doing a lot of really local, sort of do-it-yourself environmental research. They have like a lot of real low-cost technology that you can go out and monitor your local environment on your own and put it all online, and so that other people can use it and share it and come up with new technologies. So the project goals for this project were threefold. Ron and I met earlier this summer to discuss them, and the ones we decide on are, first, analysis of the forest cover along the bay and how it's changed. Everyone knows that, this is a pretty big issue and everyone's talking about it. Going along with this is analysis of urban growth and development, human development, and change in impervious surfaces throughout the bay, and other things. It's sort of, we got talking about this because the whole sewer line extension and how that would affect things, and possible gas line extensions, and sort of how that would affect the new growth. And while I didn't have the exact date of where that would be, there's other ways I could figure that out and calculate how are these towns growing and in what directions and how densely. And the third, the impact on bay wildlife. Mostly things that people harvest around here, such as clams, mussels, scallops, as well as some birds, you know, shorebirds, and how the outcomes of the first two goals affected the wildlife. Now I'm going to talk about, you know, how did I perform this project? So it was mostly software-based, and I use this program called ArcGIS, which stands for Geographic Information System. That's what GIS is. So I didn't use, Google Earth or anything. This is a bit different. It's very powerful software, and you can use it to calculate large areas of land and how they change. It's very useful. So, as we all know, Penobscot Bay is an enormous area. I mean, if you include the whole bay, it's absolutely huge. So, for the purpose of the study, and because I only had a few months to do it, I did focus mainly on the West Bay, and it also seemed to be of the most concern. So, from Stockton Harbor in the north, and all the towns down the coast to Thomaston? Is that your
South Thomaston.
Yeah, to South Thomaston in the south. The data for this came from the main office of Geographic Information Systems, the NLCD, which is National Land Cover Data Set, which I'll get to in a minute, and Friends of Penobscot Bay. Ron provided me with a huge plethora of information, which is pretty useful. So, and when I'm all done with this, be able to package this up and give it back and be able to use this for future research. So what is this, the National Land Cover Data Set? What is it? Well, it's a comprehensive land cover data set for the entire United States, including Alaska and Hawaii. And it uses satellite technology to pick up different bands of light and different land covers for the entire country. And it's really cool. It's a fun data set to work with. Advantages of using this over something like Google Earth, because if you've ever been on Google Earth, you can, it does have something like historic imagery where you can see images from the past. And those are cool to look at, but it's not exactly useful in being able to say definitively this is how much forest lost or this is how much land became developed. So I use this, and it's nice because it comes in a set of classifications of categories, basically, for different types of land. And it's available for everywhere in the United States. So any place you want to see what type of land cover it is, it's there. So these are the main seven categories that I looked at, and they all kind of break down into subcategories. First is water, most of water and perennial ice cover. Then there's developed land, which is broken down to low, medium, and high-intensity residential, and then also commercial, industrial, transportation use. And then there's barren land, which is mostly quarries, rocks, sand, sometimes beaches get picked up on those. Forests is broken down into deciduous, evergreen, and mixed forests. And then grasslands, pretty much just grassland. Agriculture is things like pastures, hay, orchards, vineyards, cultivated crops. And wetlands are like woody wetlands and emergent wetlands. So, I mean, even from this, you guys can sort of see in the water, developed land, you know, things like that's New York, it's pretty obvious, very red. You can really see barren land. Forest cover, it's all the green. Grassland, you can sort of see this yellow in the Midwest. Lots of agriculture also in the Midwest is that brown. So it's pretty cool, and you can zoom in, you know, pretty much anywhere you want. And so that's what I use. So this is one of the maps I made using this data set. It's mostly just a reference map, and it's pretty big. I hope to have it printed out. It's a big 4-foot by 3-foot map. And this is sort of just give you a sense of what some of these places look like up close with this data set. Here's Rockland here. This is with the streets on top of it. But yeah, this is it. This is just Rockland Raw. So you can see all the red, pretty much all the shades of red and pink are developed land. And you can see downtown and the seaweed processing plant sticking out there, and all of downtown very developed. And then it gets a little less developed out here. It's low intensity, but it's still very developed, and it really explodes. So this is from 2011. They create these data sets about every 5 years. It takes a long time because they have a ton of different satellite images, and they have to sort of account for cloud coverage in different times of year. So the two data sets that I used were from 2011 and 1992. So basically I'm comparing the past 20 years about and how the land cover has changed over that time. Oops. Also be providing these maps afterwards if you'd like to look at it more. Should be a little bit lighter, but so this is a similar image. This is Rockland again. And on the left is Rockland in 1992, and this is in 2011. It might be a little bit hard to see, but you can sort of tell right off the bat that there's a big difference, especially in just the different colors. I mean, these are exact same locations, and it's very different. So right off the bat, you can tell. This is Camden, Rockport up top, Rockland, and then Thomaston down there in the south. This is great, but how did I use this data set? You know, it's interesting to look at, but what did I actually do? And there's four main methods that I used. I'm going to go through them a little bit in depth. First one is calculating percent change by town. Basically, you can count up all the area from 1992 and from 2011 and, you know, basically find the amount of forest that increased and the amount of forest that decreased and just the percent overall of different types of land cover. Another one is sort of just simple cartographic comparison, kind of like what I just showed you, is just looking at, you know, these two different time periods and just how they look different. Third one is raster differencing and land cover transitions, which I'll get to in a second.
Haven't heard that one before.
Yeah. That's where it gets like a little bit heavier on the calculations. But I'll go into it. That's the interesting part, though. So first one, percent change. So this is a map of the whole bay, and this is percent of forest loss by town. So basically, you take those land cover data sets that I just showed you, and what's nice about that is every different type of land cover has a value, okay? So say forest, those are all, they're all value of 4. So you can extract those, and you can extract those by town. And this might be a little bit hard to see, but these are all the town borders, data that I have. You basically, you extract all that, and you count it all up from 1992, and then you count it all up from 2011, and then, you subtract them, and then divide it by the original. So you have the percent of what there was in 92 that has been lost since then. So this map is interesting. The darker colors are the higher amounts of deforestation. And you can see right off the bat that the lower in the bay, the more south in the bay, is a lot more heavily deforested than more inland, more up into the bay there, which I thought was pretty interesting. Except for, this is Stockton Harbor up there, which is a dark color. Rockland's down here. Areas like Vinyl Haven, Thomaston, Owl's Head, St. George, very heavily deforested. They all lost between 20 and 36% of their forest.
What is the yellow?
The yellow one that's like.
The yellow is actually.
Way up there.
That's actually the. That's Barona Island.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the yellow is the least amount of forest cover lost. So that's only between 2 and 5%.
So would you say that the a lot or most of the deforestation had to do with quarrying? Because, you know, the quarrying industry of 100 years ago, plus or minus?
Not in 1992.
Yeah, this is only for the past 20 years.
Okay, but I'm just,
but
it goes back. Mm-hmm. I guess a lot would have grown back.
So that looks like, is that Camden that's been retaining its forest, at least had the least forest change?
Camden and Hope.
Camden and Hope. Rockland and Rockport are about the middle there, about 10 to 15%. But there's, I'll show you something a little bit in more detail in a minute here. So another one, just cartographic comparison. And what I did for this is I took all the subcategories of different types of land cover and simplified them to get something like this. And so this is the southern half of Penobscot Bay, and on the left is 1992, and on the right is 2011. And all the pink land, all the pink reddish land is developed land. I took all the different types, just for sort of simplicity's sake, took all the different types and made them into one. And same with forest and grassland and wetlands and so forth. But even just looking at this, I mean, you can tell there's a big difference, right? And, another thing I sort of found interesting, too, is done by Tomastin. I'm not exactly sure what that is. Sort of like a beach or something. It's something that wasn't quite there in 1992. This big purple blotch right there. It's barren land. I think this is the quarry you're talking about, though, right there.
Big Dragon Cement quarry. But it looks like Rockland has just doubled in density, or something.
Yeah. Rockland's really, really swollen up there.
And this is. As far as density, this is building?
So this is basically impervious surfaces, pretty much. And it doesn't mean there are no trees in there, but it's pretty much,
it's roads, shopping centers.
Yeah, this includes all roads and shopping centers. Pretty much anything that's about, I believe the exact category is 70% impervious land. So there are some trees in there, clearly. Look outside, there's trees. But 70% of it is, things like asphalt or buildings.
A lot of building on Al's Head, I can see.
Comparison. Well, one of the things you can kind of tell is, you can see the roads very clearly in the 2011 ones. And that doesn't mean the roads were there in 1992, but they just weren't very developed on. Maybe there was one or two houses here and there, but now it's like they're lined with houses. And, the more, less trees and more houses all along.
You had that major airport expansion too in Al's Head.
Oh, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's and it. You can actually.
You can see quite a difference.
Yeah, I believe the airport's right here.
Yep.
So this is just one way. That's the south. And this is up north here, northern half, Belfast and Searsport, Stockton Harbor. Mm. You can really see it with Belfast, especially here, I think.
But does it look like a slower rate of growth there? I can't tell, but Belfast...
Maybe a little bit. It's a little hard to tell just from these. These are sort of just for quick reference. The more hard data stuff is...
Belfast's rate of growth has just surged since that boat building company and all went up there, and now they've become a second art mecca. And dining mecca. It's probably since 2012 been like.
So yeah, those are sort of the more two quicker, easier ways to use this data set and look at it. Yeah, then we get to some of the more complicated stuff, but it's not too bad. So these data sets, they're raster, which, it sounds sort of scary, but really all it means is that they calculate all the land cover by a pixel, which is just a square. And each pixel is 30 by 30 meters. So each pixel is 900 square meters. So this is Vinyl Haven and North Haven here. And yeah, 1992 on the left, and 2011 on the right here. And yeah, just immediately you can tell the difference. Huge evergreen forests in 1992. And yeah, not so much in 2011. I'm going to use this one as an example because it's just very obvious. So from this, you know, even just looking at it, you can tell that there's a big difference. But, you know, how do you really calculate that? How do you really figure out how much has been lost and where? And
but they've been cutting off all their softwood for years over there and bringing it to the mainland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And hauling hardwood back to burn.
Yeah. But it grows back.
Not right. If they build on it.
Yeah, the light-colored areas are more of this impervious stuff, et cetera, is it?
Yeah, I mean, really most of the development has been on the south here. But you can sort of see these roads and stuff come through.
Yeah.
But what I want to get across here is the method I use. So pretty much all the green, even both shades of green here are some sort of forest cover. And for the sake of this project, I did group them together, the deciduous and evergreen. So to figure out where exactly the forests have been lost, because you can kind of tell, but where exactly have they been lost? It's cool, you can actually extract both of these from the data sets and just see the forest, you know, for the 2 years. And even from looking at this, you could tell a little bit, but not exactly. So, and this is where the geographic information software really comes in handy, is you can do some math, you know, and basically subtract the 2011 forest cover from the 1992 forest cover, and you get something like this. So this is everywhere that there was forest in 92, or there no longer are. So pretty much everywhere that's been deforested. And this doesn't necessarily mean it's all urban. It doesn't mean that, or all developed. You know, a lot of it is grasslands or wetlands. Not so much agriculture on this one. But, I mean, a lot of it is development. But, you know, so this is cool. But how do you know what it became? You know, this is kind of useful. You say, oh, this is a lot of land that's been deforested. But what is it now? So, yeah, then land cover transition. So, go back to our original 2011 data set here. And basically take what I just showed you. Take the deforested areas and then basically do the same thing again and subtract it from this. And you get something like this. So this shows all the colored areas here are, except for the blue, are areas that have been deforested and what they are now. So all the pink and red areas, those are developed areas. These darker green ones are wetlands of some sort. And this yellow, especially along the edges here and sprinkled in between, is grasslands. So, yeah, you can tell a lot. I mean, there has been a lot of urban development. Or just development. I wouldn't necessarily call it urban. It's not a very populated island.
Some people would argue with you.
Yeah. I don't know. I haven't been there, but it only has a population of about 1,100. So, I mean, that's kind of what I think is incredible about this
that's
stuff,
in the
too.
Winter.
Yeah, that's in the winter. I don't have information for the summertime populations. I wish I did. But yeah, so I used this method and I went through and I did this for pretty much all the towns across the bay here. I'm gonna show you. So that's sort of the similar thing, and this is up with Searsport and Stockton Harbor. And you can see here it's a little bit grainier, sort of, you know. That's because It's those squares, those pixels I was talking about. So each tiny little dot is 900 square meters. But, you know, that's useful because you can add them up. And
so in this picture, the white or beige is forested?
Not necessarily forested. So these maps I'm showing you here, that's just forest loss, or it's just forest transition. It's just where the forests have transitioned to a new type of land cover here. The white doesn't necessarily mean it's forest, although a lot of it is. But yeah, so this is mostly focused on forest loss here. So yeah, for these two towns, I did also, you'll see in the next few slides, I did group some of the towns together, somewhat for presentation purposes, and also they just had very similar statistics overall. I know, you know, there's sort of some individuality with the towns, but so yeah, these two towns lost about 5.5 square miles of forest in the past 20 years, which is about 14% of what there was. Now it's about, you know, 3.7 square miles of grassland. You might notice in a lot of the grassland ones, the percent changes are really high because there simply really wasn't grassland 20 years ago. There just wasn't very much. So, yeah, 3.7 miles, square miles. Only about just a little less than 1 square mile of developed land, although square mile is a lot. And for a town that... you know, it wasn't very big to begin with. That's still about a quarter increase in development. About half a square mile of wetlands, and yeah, agriculture is pretty minimal. But something interesting too I found is that the increase in development in percent doesn't necessarily match up with the increase in population by any means. There's only been about 84 more people, permanent residents, that is, you know, since 1990.
Wow.
And it's only about 2% of the pop, you know, 2% increase in population, but about 0.25% in developed land increase. So, you know, that's a lot. Yeah.
What's the difference between grassland and agriculture?
So, grassland is mostly just any open field that's not being used to grow things on. They can tell through different kinds of sensors when there's sort of crops or hay being grown on a land, or vineyards or orchards or something like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas a grassland just, you know, might be sort of just open space, but it's really not, still not really being used, you know, very much.
But it's grown
quite a bit.
Right, right. So so the areas in here...
The forest went away and it's now like a meadow?
Yeah, basically. Yeah, that's my understanding.
And because
so all these yellow lands, are where there were forests, but now they're deforested, but they're just grassland. You know, they're just a meadow. And we sort of saw some of those the other day when we were, Ron took me around yesterday, showed me the whole bay, and I sort of saw some of these places. Yeah, you can see them up on the mountain. Actually, I think I was looking at probably this one the other day. We were out on, actually, I think it was that. We were out on Searsport Island. You can see up on the mountain, it's just big clearing. Yeah, so it's just grassland now. And
so
maybe that's potential development, or, you know, I can't say exactly why it's grassland. But
it could be weather that took the forest away at the top of a mountain.
Yeah, it could be.
Because probably the mountains here were rocky ledge.
Maynard's Burning Wood. I mean, we do a lot of...
Right.
You'll see they'll clear acres
mm-hmm.
to sell, just to sell the wood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't exactly speak to why some of these land cover transition or why places are deforested, but I can tell you where and what they are now, for sure. So next is Belfast. They lost just under 4 square miles of forest, about 15%. About 2 square miles of that is grassland, and just under 2 square miles is developed land. So you can, it's pretty cool. I mean, this is Belfast down here. You can see a lot of it is sort of infill, but a lot of it, too, is coming out here, more into the wilderness. And yeah, that about almost went up almost 50% in developed land in the last 10 years. And you know, while the developed land went up almost 50%, the population only went up about 4%. Went up a total of 287.
So what's the development being used for? If there's no people to use it, why is it being developed?
Yeah, well, I'll get there in my conclusions. I'm just going to go through these real quick.
You came in late. This is only up to 2011. So the last
three years.
Yes,
I apologize.
Three years.
I knew where I was.
Oh, that's okay.
So, yeah, next is Camden-Rockport. Especially with Camden, you can see a lot of infill. These are the streets, but a lot more impervious surfaces all across the board. It lost about 8% of its forest cover. Not too bad. About 3 square miles. I mean, it is a big town. But it's seen almost 100% increase in its developed land. An extra just over three square miles. And this is between Camden and Rockport. Almost 3 square miles of new developed land. As well as about 1 square mile of grassland, about 1.5 square miles of wetlands. And similarly, the population's only increased by about 72 people. And this is permanent residents. I can't necessarily speak to the summertime populations. But yeah, you know, that's such a negligible increase in population, but these developments are through the roof. And now we get to Rockland, and I believe this includes Owl's Head as well. So you see Owl's Head here. Yeah, with Rockland, you can sort of see a lot of, there's not much right in here because this was already developed, but the developed land's really, really pushing out here, really filling in. And yeah, this town lost about almost a quarter of its forests, about 23%, 4.5 square miles. Yeah, lost almost a quarter in the past 20 years, which is a lot. Lost a good bit of its agriculture too. And changed about 45, increase of about 45% in developed land, about 3.2 square miles. Seen some wetlands too, about 1.5 square miles, and some grasslands. And again, this is all where there was forest cover, and it transitioned into this.
And you're saying the population has dropped by
the population, the permanent population has actually dropped. It went from about, I think it was about 7,900 to about 7,200 people in the past 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
About 8%, which is really interesting, I think.
I think it's more now.
The next is Thomaston, South Thomaston. Very colorful map here. It's a little all over the place, but yeah, they lost almost 6 square miles, about almost 40% of its forest. Saw an increase of almost 3 square miles in wetlands, 2 square miles of grasslands, and about 1.5 square miles of developed land, which was almost a little over 80% of what it was, 80% increase in what it was in 92. So it was pretty small. And you can sort of, believe this is the airport right here, and you can see sort of the areas right around it have become more developed, or just more pavement, you know, right around it, and some grasslands too. The population of these towns has also dropped by about 16%. Forget the exact numbers, but yeah, it's dropped about a little over 500 people in the past 20 years.
I wonder if that was when they moved to prison.
Good point.
Well, they were permanent residents.
Yeah, that is true. They do count on the census. This is true.
Oh, very good.
And the last time I looked at it definitely was Final Haven, which we saw already. But it's lost about 6 square miles of forest cover. It's about 22%. But it really only got more developed a little less than a square mile. I know 250% is a lot, you know, increase, but it wasn't very much to begin with. So, I mean, even one square mile is a lot of length. Yeah, and a lot of the forest turned into grasslands as well, and some wetlands. And while the permanent population's only gone up about 8%, I do imagine that the summertime population has shot up. Now,
what is that island at the bottom of Vinohaven there that has the red on it there?
This one?
Yeah. That's, what's that one called? Is it?
Is this the one?
Hurricane Island?
I think that's Hurricane Island's a little island further out. I'm not sure.
Looks like it's gotten a bit of development there.
Yeah.
Could be Hurricane Island. Yeah. Because they're expanding organization, and I think it's a good thing. So.
I can't think of the island. Linda Bean just bought it, and it's very developed. It's got for an island.
In what town?
It's not a township, but it's an island.
Yeah.
These are all townships.
Well, this is two of them. There's
North Haven
and Vinohaven.
Vinohaven's.
Well, I know she bought an island off Port Clyde.
Off Port Clyde, right. I was thinking we were down
at the other end of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It does look like the city, I mean, the downtown of Vinohaven has certainly been the growth area, that lower right corner.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious where most of this development is being centered here.
Get out there and see the window, walk up for the window.
So, some conclusions, some overall things about some of this data. As far as forest cover goes, I found substantial deforestation in all the townships you've seen. You know, I think, you know, most or many square miles, you know, at least four or five. Add up to over 30 square miles of deforestation with the towns I mentioned. An average of almost a quarter, you know, for all of them. Another thing that I thought was pretty interesting that doesn't have to do with the urban growth, but still has to do with deforestation is, emergence of grasslands and wetlands, both about 12 and 13 square miles, respectively, which is interesting because there really just wasn't a lot of grassland cover or wetland cover at all in 1992. There was a little bit here and there, but just not much at all.
I wonder if there was a lot of wet forests that are where the moose go tramping around because it's basically like swaths full of trees.
Yeah, that definitely counts as wetland because part of the wetlands are the classifications as the dataset I was using describes them as woody wetlands and emergent wetlands. So these aren't necessarily what you might think of as like something in Florida, down by the bayou. But, they are wet, and they've increased greatly.
So if you're taking down acres of trees that probably had wetland in there to begin with, without the trees, the wetland is going to expand?
Yeah, most likely.
How many acres to a mile?
What is it? 640? 640 rings a bell, but I won't.
And if an acre is square, how many feet on a side? Because
I didn't do the calculations.
No. Anyway, it's just.
We could hold on 1 second. We could look this up.
That's right. We're in the time of smartphones.
Yeah, 640. You're right. 640 acres in a square mile. So that's forest cover, and for urban growth, so sort of mentioned the growth developed land and the percentage of that is much higher and doesn't really align with the growth in population. It would be very interesting to look at the growth in summer populations, which I'm sure would be a lot, which I hypothesize at least might be a little bit more in line with the growth. On average, these towns increased by about 85% of what they were. I mean, that's a lot. That's almost double the impervious surfaces and just general development. Over 12 square miles of this urban growth, while the average town population actually decreased by about 2% of permanent residents in these. So I'm thinking that a lot of this development is largely for tourism, commercial, and industrial purposes rather than permanent residences.
Yes. One thing I think that makes the difference here is we have so many people that don't winter here. They're permanent residences here, in theory. But they have to stay in Florida 6 months and a day to get the benefit of the inheritance tax. Their homes are here. They live here. But they play with that number, so we lose them as residents. And this is definitely where they live, on the coast. And I think that that plays a huge part.
They're called snow birds, right?
I think that plays a definite part in the decrease in our population, is that they're now residents of some other state.
Oh, and they only come here in the summer, so they're not. Yeah, it also, this is all census information, you know, so it kind of depends, too, like when they come and, you know, go door to door and see how many people live there. Yeah, if they do it, I think they usually do it in, like, October or November, where people might
they
already be
left. Only in theory, they've gone forward 6 months in a day. So that they get the inheritance tax. Now there's no inheritance tax in Florida.
And Maine loses the income tax also?
Yes.
Because they're not permanent residents.
That's right.
But they were once.
Yes.
Otherwise there wouldn't be a population decline.
That's right.
These are not summer people.
No.
So, yeah, and the last thing is the impact on the bee wildlife. Show another map. Another map I made here. Sort of similar to the other one. It shows the whole bay. And you can zoom in a little bit here. Zoom into Rockland. And the green is areas, you know, at least place I had data on that there are big harvesting areas for clams and scallops and mussels mostly. And the purple areas are for shorebirds. And as far as the development stuff, the black is the urban or the developed land in 1992, and the red is the developed land in 2011. So it's really just those two different land covers on top of each other, so you can see very clearly, you know, what's increased. Yeah, it's increased a lot around Owl's Head here. A lot of stuff coming out into the bay. Down here, but this sort of the southern tip of the bay here, really big area for harvesting clams and scallops, as you might know. And just all this over here, going over to Waldoboro. Down here,
looks like Stonington hasn't grown too much. Or, I mean, Port Clyde, I'm sorry. Stonington is the other.
You can see a ton of, there's a really heavy stuff right in these little nooks and crannies within the island. Going up the coast, not a ton up here, but definitely right around the shores, you know, Searsport and all around Searsport Island, a lot of fishing going on, a lot of climbing and so
there's
forth.
There's a mercury problem in the upper.
Right.
So
yeah.
Probably they're trying to people avoid that.
Where's
that? The mercury pollution.
Oh, in Searsport.
Mm-hmm.
Just been coming down the river all these years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now look at Castine. Now that's on the opposite side from Belfast. Mm-hmm. There. That red there.
Castine has increased a lot too. I didn't include it in the town report there, but that was one I noticed. Increased in development and stuff around that.
The black and red there is, wow.
Yeah, the red is where it increased, basically. That's that.
And then you look inland.
Yeah. Alright, so that was about the extent of my project, and it's a lot of maps, a lot of data tables, a lot of stuff, you know. It was only about 3 months, and I was working on another project as well. So I wish I could have done more. And there's a lot more you can do with this stuff. You know, it could go on forever. And Ron was sort of describing some of these issues with me yesterday, saying, oh, well, you know, this issue, it always leads to this one, and it just leads to a bigger discussion every time. So some things to do with it, maybe. Looking into... I did have some data on EPA pollutants and exactly where they are, but I didn't really have time to include that in my analysis. And doing some more demographic research on figuring out summertime populations and how many tourists come in. I know that has to be out there somewhere. And seeing if that sort of aligns more with the development, I think that'd be interesting to look at. And how many people live here, and how many people leave in the winter, and how many, you know, how many people stay here all year round. Censusreporter.org is a pretty interesting website. You can just type in any town, and it shows you historic stuff. It has really neat graphs, and it's really easy to use. Another one is the economy, I don't know if there's quite a GDP for each town, but, you know, is the output, is that going more in line with development as well? Because a lot of this development is sort of industrial and commercial stuff, especially up north by Searsport and Stockton Harbor, you know. So it's a lot of increase in development, but not in people, you know. So I guess just looking, you know, is the economy also going up with the increase in development and more commercialness?
For example, if there was, you know, a Walmart moves into a town, mm-hmm. suddenly there's a lot more money circulating in that town as people come to it, but the domestic product for the people living
there. Right. Really, yeah, I guess, out. Yeah, that's sort of what I'm talking about. And just, you know, big industrial places, you know, like the salt piles. You know, I guess this question is sort of like, well, these places are obviously increasing in developed land, but are they benefiting the people that live there? Or is the money just, you know,
going
out? You know, is it just, you know, being filtered out?
That's an important question.
Right.
Well, industrial jobs, the growth isn't there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It seems like there's a lot of development per person.
Yeah.
Unless it's somebody building a residence on a huge piece of land, many, many acres, mm-hmm. but for the census data that you've shown, it doesn't come near to compare to the development.
Right.
It just, it's really quite lopsided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. That would be the next step is, yeah, figuring out why. You know, why these things are, why it is so lopsided. I do think tourism has a lot to do with it, and you know, a lot of this new development might be hotels or motels or things like that, or just commercial places, you know, restaurants and especially chain stores. You know, that's included in all the developed land, things like that. So, if you put up a new motel, you're probably going to want, you know, put up a new restaurant, a new convenience store across the street, you know, so it's for that multiplier effect. Just figuring out, what if it isn't regular population, permanent population, then what is it? You know, I guess that's the important question for the next step. And something that might be able to sort of help people understand that and look at it would be the creation of an online web map as a tool. I really wanted to get to that this summer, but I only have a week left, and I'm kind of running out of time here. So that would have been neat. And if you guys ever get another intern, you know, another geography intern or something, there's a lot of great tools out there. I'll definitely leave something in the outline, the report for you, that says sort of what to include, what might be interesting to look at. Benefits of a web mapper, you can put a lot of different layers, a lot of different information on top of each other and compare it. And, you know, turn things on and off so you can look at, you know, income and development or population and development or housing price and so forth.
And you can add more data in as you get it.
Yeah, and you can add more data in. Especially CarterDB, the one on top. That one's great. I use it a lot, and it's free. All right. That's pretty much the extent of my project. And you guys probably have a lot of questions. It's 1 o'clock now. I do have to get on the road in a little bit, but we can maybe leave for about 15 minutes for discussion or so.
Yeah, because I think a lot of the folks that are here have seen forests disappear from our area. For example, there's an industrial park that's over on the far end of town there that wasn't there not that very long ago. And people I talked to here said that's where they'd go hunting and playing as kids and all that, and suddenly gone.
Mm-hmm.
And has anyone noticed their favorite woods are disappearing over time?
I'm probably one of the culprits in terms of the development there. I bought 13 acres in Appleton, although it's off your map there.
Mm-hmm.
And I built a cabin on it and a driveway to get down to it. And I cut a few trees down. Actually, a tree landed on my deck and trees down that would have landed, you know, on the house if they had fallen and so forth. And now it's more grassland than it is forest. It probably could have been classified as mostly forest before, although there was a big 5 acres of grassland in the middle, and it's still there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure a lot of other people like me, but I plan to build a farm there. So,
oh,
and I would say the advantage of us farming is if you actually can make money off undeveloped land, you know what I mean? If you can actually generate an income, the land is less likely to be developed for like shopping centers or things like that. You know what I mean? Because actually, it's an income-earning property.
You know, there were a lot of camps. But go ahead.
I've been waiting to ask you this question to the end.
Thank you.
I think toward the end we got into a very important issue that your study has raised, and you didn't comment a lot, but there wasn't time to do that. And that is how closely coupled is development to population, and how we could talk about coupling constants. I think you may be able to do some more work to develop a series, a whole theory of the nature of the relationship of development to population.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly, the coupling is going to be much stronger where there's a huge transient population, as here, that needs services. We don't know. Your study wasn't designed to show you how tourism has changed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's extremely important. You wouldn't have the same conclusions if you did the study about Indianapolis.
Right. Yeah, this was something I really sort of came to at the end, too, which is one of those things that was like, oh, I wish I could have thought of this earlier, you know,
It's very dynamic. It's a dynamism of the coupling between development and population.
Yeah.
And so we shouldn't just take the permanent population of the towns as being the measure of the coupling.
Right. Right, because you're saying, if you only looked at that look at developed land, you wouldn't get the picture at all.
You get a wrong linkage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's a good point.
That's going to be important.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thanks, Katina.
Darn.
I live in Tenants Harbor, and some neighbors down the street had to dig up part of a pretty extensive driveway system for that lot. And so I was ready. I don't think I did, but I volunteered to go to the town meeting if they were looking for a variance. As far as I know, they didn't get it, and they had to hire somebody to chop up and turn part of the paved driveway system into, grass or whatever.
Mm.
And I thought that was a bit extreme, but from being here and knowing how everything, all the little pieces add up to the big thing, I have to give the town of St. George some credit for, and enforcing, they, you know, they're right next to Tennant's Harbor, the, mm-hmm. the harbor, literally. And so this gives me a different perspective on what happened down the street from me.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Your presentation, which was incidentally very good.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Put a little bit of guilt in my head. we live in Port Clyde, mm-hmm. and we live on Drift End Road, if anybody knows it. And we have about 10 acres of woods next to our little house. Mm-hmm. We know that 10 acres has been woods for at least 50 years, mm-hmm. and undoubtedly much more. So the question came about selling it. And to what purpose, and to whom? And we found a young couple who grew up in Port Clyde over 5-6 generations, and we thought, exactly the right people. Mm-hmm. But that didn't work out too well. So somebody else wants to come in and carve out a piece, buy the property, and carve out a piece in the middle for a parking lot. Mm-hmm. Village parking lot, which is sorely needed, I must say. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I feel guilty about what to do with this property now. You disturbed my rest.
Sorry.
Wait, I want to add one more thing. Since we have lived in Port Clyde in the summers for 45 years, we've seen change. Mm-hmm. And we see that even though only a few people come to build new homes, they come with a great deal more money, and they will build a home on 4 acres or 5 mm-hmm. instead of half an acre, like the old residents did.
Right.
The fishermen were content to have a front yard and a backyard uh-huh. and a driveway.
Right.
But not anymore.
And be right next to the road with not a 3-mile driveway.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So there's another factor to consider. Mm-hmm. It's a very complex and dense socioeconomic issue.
Yeah. Problem. One quick thing I did sort of notice, just looking a little bit in the demographics, especially like Vinyl Haven, some of the, you know, obviously the census data isn't super accurate for this kind of town and population, but, you know, it's a lot of upper class wealthy people, you know, who are buying this and, yeah, building these large homes and, it's not necessarily dense.
Meadows and grasslands around the
right,
house.
Right,
yes.
Right.
Perfect.
One bit of good news has been one little bit of good news has been at the far end of the Semiset, that is the there's a large plot of land that the owners were trying to find a developer to buy it. Mm-hmm. It was up to, I think, 80 homes or 40 homes, something like that. Anyway, so they couldn't find anyone, so finally some magnate bought the whole thing for himself.
Right.
So I think presumably I'm going to go and talk to him, but hopefully it's going to keep the forest standing. There's plenty of room to stick mansions already.
Good luck with that.
Somebody said it's going to be a family compound, so we'll see how many homes he builds.
Uh-oh, maybe the bushes are moving north.
That's much better for the land.
Yes.
There's less septic, less wells, less everything.
Yeah, less pesticides and all that.
Really, yeah, I think...
Because a lot of this is forest fragmenting, too. It's, you know, as we saw this big bite that they did to put that salt pile in. Mm-hmm. It used to be a horseshoe of woods going around Mack Point. Now it's broken because, you know, there are moose and things down there I've mm-hmm. seen before, you know. And now they'd have to climb over salt piles to stay in the woods there. They just won't. You know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, look at Glen Cove. When you enter Glen Cove from Rockport and Old County Road.
Yeah.
And... my husband's family, they own a lot of that land, and now my nephew's family own it, but, I mean, they've developed the whole mountain area there that goes all the way back to South Street, and they've developed it all the way down to the golf course.
Hmm.
And that all used to be wildland and farmland.
Say developed, you mean it's a bunch of houses now?
It's nothing but houses. There's a few open fields, but by and large, it's houses. And most of the people up on the hillside are people that are only here a little over 5 months a year.
No, you know, I'm really hoping this data...
But
see,
it's
this
tax
is
revenue
important.
That does it. The towns don't care what you do as long as you're going to get the tax revenue.
You're right.
But a lot of times there's these single developments. If we don't keep track of every one of those through the planning boards and so on, they pop up with, you know, without adequate info. I mean, I'd really like to see them go, well, what is this going to affect the greater forest you know, area of this area. Sure, you're just popping a three or four spots, but is that now fragmenting enough that these animals and those don't want to live here anymore?
Right.
You know, I think that's very important.
I think the speaker has called attention to a virus.
Deer and everything.
Something like a virus that has infected the Vent Coast.
Yeah.
A slow-growing virus, but nevertheless a dynamic process underneath all the surface appearances, which is stealing legacies.
Yeah. It's definitely changing a lot.
That's what we do. We're humans.
Yeah.
Yes. We eat it up and change it and destroy it.
Well, maybe the whatever is after Homo sapiens will look back and go, they were like Neanderthals only with guns.
maybe the robots.
Yeah, robots.
All right. Hey, any more questions? I know he has got to head on down to that lovely drive all the way down the way.
You were listening to an August 17, 2015 talk by Azavia Research Fellow Kevin Freck on Penobscot Bay's coastal forests. Freck carried out his study on behalf of Public Laboratory and Friends of Penobscot Bay. For more information, visit publiclab.org and penbay.org.